Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrity has apparently escaped from CPAC without any lingering bruises or abrasions from the Occupy folks or any other encounters he may have had with the crazies there this weekend. Overall, it seems, Jim, like it was a pretty productive conference. The three major presidential candidates that were there were pretty well received. Romney wins the straw poll, which I think surprised a few people. Santorum a strong second, and then basically accused them of rigging the straw poll. Overall, it seems like there's a lot of enthusiasm, and from what you tell me, most of it's pretty much based in reality, so that's a good thing.
Yes, this way, I think it's safe that you say there's enthusiasm. I think there is determination to beat Obama. I think that everyone I did not encounter many folks who you might classify as Kool-Aid drinkers, folks who believe that their preferred candidate is perfect and the other guys are terrible. I think that there's a realism to most conservatives this year. They can find something to object to in any one of the candidates. I think all three candidates gave pretty darn strong speeches. And the phrase that I kept coming across, which I think was kind of interesting, was the number of conservatives who said, yeah, it's like, so what do you think of the presidential field? And they'd say, you know, we really got to take the Senate, which is a little bit of, you know, some might say, oh, it's a sign of depression, or it's a sign of gloom. But I think what it says is that, look, with each one of these candidates having some sort of flaw that gives certain conservatives pause. I mean, with Romney, it's the flip-flops and the idea that he's not an authentic conservative, particularly when he proclaims himself to be a severe conservative. With Gingrich, it's all kinds of the million and one ideas and never following up and the personal baggage, et cetera. And with scandals, with Rick Santorum, a lot of folks say, oh, is this a rerun of George W. Bush, a big government conservative? Everyone kind of realizes, well, you know what? Look, if we elect if we send back more conservatives to the House, and if the Republicans take the Senate and we have conservatives in the Senate, which is a very key distinction. I think you'll see a lot of activity in the Senate primaries this year. Then the course of government will be effectively set even if Obama is reelected. Now, that's not perfect. Obviously, I don't think conservatives can afford to concede the presidential race. But I think people are broadening their perspective and recognizing that, look, if the presidential race is going to have its challenges, maybe we should be focusing our attention where we can have the most leverage. And you know, a Republican Senate would make a very big deal, as we've seen in all these budgetary fights. So a great time, I think, was had by all. I think conservatives are not depressed. I think they are just sober and serious-minded, and I think they recognize the difficulty of the task before them. And much better to have that than to have conservatives kind of slapping each other on the back and saying, you know, things are going to be hunky-dory, we have nothing to worry about this year.
Well, Jim, do you think the 38% for Mitt Romney, most of that was that they think he's a genuine conservative favorite, or they are going down the electability path there?
It's a good question. It's worth noting that there are conservatives who are quite happy with Mitt Romney. They have not all suffered head injuries. they are not imbibing heavily. You know, they're out there. There's some complaint, you know, the Santorum folks are saying, oh, he bust in his people. Well, first of all, that's traditionally what a straw poll helps organize. It helps measure. You know, like, that's what you're supposed to do at a straw poll, is bring in your people and mobilize and show that you've got great organizational skills. Secondly, look, there were people who were genuinely happy there. And, you know, I kind of figured that, look, Santorum was going to do very well. He always does very well at these. Newt doing third place and pretty distantly was kind of surprising. And the fact that the Ron Paul folks chose not to contest this one, at least certainly not in the form that they have in the past, a bit surprising. But look, Mitt Romney can, you know, hold his head up high. I thought I would have given him a B+ for his speech, but he got standing ovations, and I think a bunch of conservatives really did like what he said on Friday, I suppose. So, you know, look, Mitt Romney earned this win, and we'll talk a bit about the main caucus a few martinis from now. But, you know, look, he had a pretty good weekend, all things considered.
Well, you mentioned the budgetary issues a moment ago, and as we knew from the end of last week and we'll know officially today, the president unveiling his new budget proposal. And as we know from last year, the president has the strong support of Congress when it comes to his budget proposals. Last year, his budget failed 97-0 in the U.S. Senate because it was completely oblivious to the fact that there are huge debts and deficits. And this one isn't much different, except for the fact that there are parameters forced in there from the debt ceiling deal last year. And he's still projecting a $1.33 trillion deficit this year. He claims, however, Jim, that there will be $4 trillion in deficit reduction, which I'm sure is cooked somehow in terms of projected spending increases. It's a reduction on that. But, of course, the big reason he thinks that's going to come down, or at least hopes that it comes down, is through massive tax increases on the rich, which, of course, are not going to happen in this Congress. And unless there's a massive shift in political winds, won't happen in the next Congress either. So when you think that the deficit numbers, as he projects them, are bad, the real deficit projection numbers, when you factor in the political realities of the situation, mean that we're headed for an ocean of red ink, and the imperative of defeating this guy in November just grows stronger.
I'm kind of struck that Obama's going to unveil these numbers. And of course, a budget is a political document. And of course, this is just another step in the campaign process. But having said that, one, he has completely forgotten about his pledge to cut the deficit in half within 5 years. And he hasn't even come close. I mean, to fiscal 2009, last year under Bush, you know, TARP is involved, et cetera, we're running a deficit of $1.4 trillion. It's been in the neighborhood of $1.3 trillion every year since. This year it's $1.33 trillion under the projection of Obama's numbers. As you note, that counts into effect tax hikes that aren't going to go kick in yet and hopefully will not, you know, ever be enacted. I mean, Obama boomed the deficit in the neighborhood of like 10 times what it was in, say, 2007. And really hasn't done anything remotely well to shrink the deficit at all, and the debt has been going on. We've been adding about, you know, more than a trillion per year to the debt each year. It's egregious. It's awful. And what's kind of amazing is how much the administration isn't really worried about this. It's kind of like they just kind of, you know, shrug their shoulders and basically believe that everybody should be just kind of, if we ignore it, it'll go away. I mean, just for perspective, we are paying in the first 4 months of this fiscal year. We paid $169.2 billion. That is more than the entire total deficit for 2007. So it's not that long ago, during the allegedly bad old days of the Bush years, the deficit was manageable. I'm not saying it's great to run $160 billion in debt, but, you know, that's manageable when you look at the size of the economy as a whole. We have endured 4 years of recession under this president, and that has come with massive booms in debt each year. And so Obama should get torn to, you know, to shreds over this. I don't know if he will. I don't know if people will look at this budget and see the absolute abdication of all responsibility in terms of spending that Obama is showcasing here. But he certainly deserves it. And I certainly hope that, you know, we see another similar vote in which every Democrat senator recognizes they can't be on record as approving a budget like this.
Yeah, and the annoying thing, and I'm sure he'll do it today, I'm sure he'll do it as he campaigns for this budget, is how he treats people like morons if they actually want to reduce spending. He'll throw out that fake indignation of, oh, we can't cut back now. We're on the brink of a comeback. And he'll talk about the students in college who would have to suffer and on and on and on, all these other interest groups that he's trying to pander to. And if we just raise taxes on the wealthy, then all of these problems will just go away, even though it'd be a complete drop in the bucket compared to the deficits that he's racking up here. But
Greg, I keep marveling at his you know, particular favorite phrase. Some say we can't afford to spend this money. I say we can't afford not to spend this money.
That's right.
Try that with your credit card company. Try that with anybody else, with any time you spend money. That if you're spending more than you have taking in, and you see, well, no, I'm, you know, like, try to buy something that costs $10 with only $5 and say, well, you know, I don't really have the money to pay for this, but I still think you should give it to me because I have this $5 here. And I'm telling you, I can't afford not to spend that money. The store clerk will say, no, your analysis is 180 degrees incorrect. You really can't afford to spend that. You know, so. That, you know, for some reason it works, and I don't understand why Obama, you know, can manage to do this time and again. That, oh, we can't afford to not spend money, you know.
We get to be the checkout guy, though, in November, and then we get to call security when he still tries to keep spending.
Passing bad checks.
Exactly.
Or as he said when he went to Best Buy, let's see if this credit card still works.
All right, on to martini number three now, Jim, and it's the main caucuses, and I don't know if they got a big head up there because of the nice things we said to Colorado and Minnesota last week when they finally ran caucus as well. But we still don't officially know who won. Mitt Romney's been declared the winner, but not all the caucuses are done because there were snowstorms. So some of them were postponed, and apparently some in areas where Ron Paul's expected to do well, and he's a very close second up there. So in a week's time span that they had to hold these caucuses, I assume they have weather forecasts there. They couldn't rearrange the timing for these ones that got postponed. And perhaps even worse than all of that, well, there's only about 5,000 or 6,000 people who showed up in the entire state. So I'm not really sure how much Big Mo, as George H.W. Bush once called it, you can really take out of something like this, whether it's Romney or Ron Paul.
You're quoting the Kennebunkport Bushes, yes. worth noting that one of the reasons that probably caused low turnout in Maine was all of the monsters from Stephen King that keep harassing citizens of that state and eating people, et cetera, et cetera. To give you a sense of how the Maine caucuses work, first of all, they decide to hold them on two separate weekends in February. Now, this strikes me as a little bit strange, but it's based on your community. Your community can either do it the first weekend in February or the second weekend. I'm of this very old school notion that you should, you know, everybody should vote on the same day, but, you know, Maine Republicans do it a little differently. Then one of the communities that was going to hold it on this second weekend, there was a terrible snowstorm. This is one more reason to not hold your primaries and caucuses quite so early in the year. if you do this in spring, you know, the only thing that could stop it would be like terrible pollen counts or something like that. You know, so as a result of that, one county, Washington County in the easternmost part of the state, postponed the caucus. They reported the results from everywhere else, and they concluded that Mitt Romney has won, and so they've declared Mitt Romney the winner, even though one more county has yet to vote, and this does not sit well with me. Traditionally, when you release the votes, you've counted all the votes. Now, there's a certain logic to say, look, Romney's probably going to win this because his margin is 194 ballots. Last time around, 113 votes were cast in this county in 2008. Ron Paul would need to make up 194, and last time he did pretty badly in this county. So, you know, is Romney the winner of the Maine caucus? Yeah, probably. Which is not the kind of answer you want to do the morning afterwards, because, you know, it'd be nice to say, oh, we've counted all the votes, and yes, Romney won by X amount. We will see what happens. I imagine one of the things kind of seems disturbing about this is that, look, if you're on the Ron Paul campaign, you are going to Washington County and you are finding any carbon-based life form you can that is registered to vote in the Republican caucus and getting them out there, because you have a chance to come from behind. You have this one little slot in which if you can, you know, and this would all be perfectly legitimate because, you know, as long as these folks are registered to vote in the Republican caucus, there you go. It is a rural, relatively poor county, so maybe there aren't that many votes to grab there. But a one more complication in an election season that has just seen too many bizarre circumstances. I think about this primary season or caucus season through the eyes of an observer of democracy from some foreign country, and their head would just be left spinning by this. But the fact, oh, by the way, this is a caucus, and yes, no delegates are selected. The actual official delegates are selected at the state convention later this year. But other than that, everything worked fine, Greg.
The official scoreboard, states who don't know how to run a caucus, 3. States who do know how to run a caucus, 2. It's nip and tuck. This could be one of the most important races throughout this whole campaign season. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.